Hello, my name's Ian Campbell. Welcome to About Regional and episode 2 in a special 3-part podcast series following the Reedy Swamp, Vimy Ridge and Tathra bushfire of March 2018 and the Yankees Gap fire of August-September 2018. I'm at Mogarika at the mouth of the Bega River, just north of Tathra Surf Club. This was a place of scary refuge when flames from the west came into Tathra 16 months ago. The images and videos taken from this location and posted to social media play in my mind as I sit here. Now, you and I last spoke around the 12-month anniversary of the Tathra bushfires back in March of this year. It was a real milestone in this community's adjustment to life after the bushfires. Now, in episode 2, we hear from someone much further down the track from natural disaster to get a sense of what might still be ahead for this community and those like it. Anne Ledbetter came to Tathra in the days immediately after the bushfire. She came with the wisdom of her own experience as the recovery coordinator for Kinglake following the 2009 Black Saturday bushfires in Victoria. At the suggestion of the Australian Red Cross and South East New South Wales Primary Health Network, Anne and I chatted recently on the sidelines of the Emergency Media and Public Affairs Conference in Sydney.
So I work nationally in disaster recovery, and I have done so for the past 5 years. My community was impacted by the 2009 Victorian Black Saturday bushfires. And at that time I was working in local government, and I ended up coordinating the recovery of the Kinglake Ranges after the fires. And that really set me on a bit of a journey of wanting to understand more about how recovery works, what doesn't work and what goes wrong, and how we can actually learn from each experience so that each time a community has to go through this, there's perhaps the journey is made a little bit more a little bit easier just by virtue of what we've been able to learn along the way.
You were there in the very early days at Tathra, and I remember you speaking of the bushfire brain. How is your community's bushfire brain all these years on? Where are things at for you and your community?
It's an interesting thing. I'm not sure you ever quite get back, which is not great news. I'm not sure you ever quite get back your full capacity in relation to bushfire brain. But what that does tell us is the profound effect that a disaster and the subsequent trauma has on people, on their the way they can process information, on the way that they literally can remember things, the way they can think about things, because it's a real insight into what a significant shock to the system a disaster can be. And I think communities evolve through this experience. I'm not sure that they ever end up just like they were. Mm-hmm. I think they end up just like they should be, yep, in whatever form that takes. But the same is true of people. And I think that recovery really... I used to think about recovery as when you had got over something. I now think of recovery as when you found somewhere to put this experience so that you can carry it with you. Mm-hmm. Because I don't actually think you leave it behind. I think it actually travels with you into the future and it shapes the person that you become.
So there's no end game to recovery? There's more of a comfortable place you get to?
I think that's right. My working definition now for recovery is being able to once again live a life that you value. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be a useful way to think about this, because it's not necessarily possible to go back. So it's not necessarily possible to go back to the way things were. It's about going forward to what things are going to become. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that you don't wake up one day and say, I've arrived, I've recovered. You know, it's actually much more about understanding that incrementally, day by day, the pain gets a bit less, the stress and grief, mm-hmm, don't disappear, but they fade into the background. They're not the thing that you think about all the time. Mm-hmm. And other things start to come to the fore. So you start to remember the things that you used to enjoy doing, and you start to reconnect with aspects of your life that you value. Mm-hmm. So I think when you're doing more of that than not, I think that's probably when you can start to consider that perhaps as an individual you've recovered, and when your community is starting to connect and work in ways that are familiar to it, then that's probably about how we would understand community recovery. But it's a long a long process. And very often there's a focus on 12 months, on the anniversary. Yep. So we've just got to get through that first 12 months. And that's a very profound time because you have a year of firsts. You know, the first birthday of someone who may have moved away or may have, in fact, you know, been killed in the emergency, mm-hmm. in the disaster. It's the first Christmas that you have to have, yep. you know, without all of your former family traditions and Christmas decorations. You know, the first return to that disaster season. So in the case of Tathra, you know, when that first fire season is coming up, you know, since the fires,
yeah.
very tense time. And we put a lot of emphasis on that first 12 months. What we're not quite as good at knowing is that actually the second 12 months is pretty tough as well. Mm. It's not about just getting to that milestone of 1 year on and suddenly everything becomes much easier. There are still some challenges that continue on beyond that anniversary, and that's where people will be now. And it's about recognising that it's still quite likely that many people are finding it quite difficult and are still feeling very uncertain about what life in Tathra or somewhere else will actually look like for them. It's there's a lot that needs to be resolved. And so I now think I think our understanding of how complex recovery is and how long this process takes is getting much better. Mm-hmm. But I do think that we've still got a little way to go before we fully understand and can recognise just how complex this process is and how much is involved in getting to that point in the future where the disaster is no longer the thing that you spend most of your time thinking about. So, yeah.
What would you say to people who are perhaps surprised in themselves that they are still feeling this, still impacted by this so many months down the track? What would you say to people who are surprised at realising that in themselves?
Yeah, I think it is surprising. I mean, it can be quite shocking, you know, because you you create all these expectations on yourself about, you know, when things should be okay. And really, we do that with things other than disaster. So for example, when someone is bereaved, often there's this kind of unspoken period of time that people will expect them to grieve.
Yes.
And then beyond that period, it's like, well, they should be probably getting to the point where they're okay again now. And who sets that? Yeah. You know, like, how does that even get decided?
Yeah.
But it's this sort of instinctive idea. Now, the challenge for people who've been through a disaster is that in most cases, they've experienced something that they've never been through before, that they may never have anticipated having to go through, and it's something that has completely disrupted the patterns of their lives. So all of the things that they used to do automatically, they now have to think about doing. You know, they have to put conscious effort into moving through their day in ways that they didn't used to before. So when your routines are disrupted or swept away, you have to build new routines.
Yeah.
And that's complicated and it's tiring, you know. So I think what I would say to people who are surprised or worried about the fact that they're still not feeling the way they used to before the fires is that that's not surprising to me. and in fact, they need to be really gentle and kind with themselves and know that there will come a time when this doesn't feel like this.
Mm-hmm.
But while it does feel like this, just understand that this is the journey of recovery, and it's a long journey. It takes usually longer than anyone imagines. It's quicker for some than others, depending on their circumstances, depending on what their life was like before the fires, and also depending on the amount of support that they can receive afterwards. But the bottom line is, I've not really met anyone who has been surprised by how quickly they were able to get over it. I think usually people are surprised by how long it takes. So there's a much more common response. So, and I think, you know, if you are, I used to have a saying when we were recovering our community that progress and momentum was generally forward. You know, like, so when people say, how's it going? I'd say, well, you know, momentum is going forward. So that's about all I want to say, you know, in terms of assessing how this is working. I think if momentum is forward, you're probably okay. If you find yourself really starting to go backwards, then it might be time to think about having a talk to someone about what your experience has been and currently is, maybe seeking some extra support just to make sense of what you're going through. It can be immensely beneficial just to have a chat with someone and even to compare notes. I've been feeling like this. How have you been? Oh, well, I've been feeling like this too. You know, that can help to create some context for what people are experiencing. But if people are worried, I think the most important thing is to get some help, to talk to a GP or a counsellor, family member, a friend. Dr. Rob Gordon has a saying that the expressed emotion is never the problem. It's only the unexpressed emotions that come back to trip us up. So just being able to have a talk about how you're feeling, I think, is really, really important.
And I think there's perhaps something also very positive that can come from an experience like this. You talk about living a life that you value. Is there a sense of empowerment that can come from an experience like this for people? They can come out of an experience like this and change their life in a way.
I think that is absolutely true. The way that I understand the impacts of disaster now, through my own experience and the work that I do, is that it is a loss of control over your life. So at its most profound experience, you were in control one day, and then by virtue of the fire or the flood or the cyclone, you are now really out of control. You don't actually know how your life works anymore. You don't know how you're going to move through your days. And so my corresponding understanding of the work of recovery is actually about helping people get back into control, getting back into the driver's seat of their lives and being able to once again be self-determining, know the direction that they want to go, make choices about how they live. I think it is actually possible that it goes even beyond that, where people can actually find new strengths, new skills. They can learn things about themselves that they didn't know. And those things can actually be quite a revelation, because often you'll hear people saying, I never thought I would be able to do this, that, or the next thing, you know. And in fact, they're not only doing it, but they're incredibly successful at it. And so it's not an easy thing to see at the beginning. And I wouldn't like people to feel that if they're not feeling like that, that things aren't working the way they should be. But the reality is, with the benefit of time and some distance from the disaster, many people can look back and be quite surprised at how far they've come, the way they have managed this life-altering event, because there's no question that that's what we're talking about. And the fact that they've been able to mobilise their inner strength, their inner resources, their experience, their passion, their empathy, whatever skills and emotions that they bring to their recovery, and can come out of an event like this stronger, having skills that they perhaps didn't know they had.
And the scars of March 18 are still very obvious on the landscape. People are starting to rebuild their homes. What can people expect to feel around, I guess, rebuilding their own home, or perhaps people seeing others rebuild their home? What are some of the things that might come up?
So I think what we need to understand about rebuilding is, similar to that first anniversary, very often people will feel a very strong sense that their life will be okay once they get their house rebuilt.
Yeah,
so it's a very natural response. So, okay, we've lost our house, so it makes sense that when the new house is rebuilt, everything will be fine, you know. And so what we experience in our community is that people told themselves that, and then when their house was rebuilt, it wasn't fine, because there's a couple of complexities around getting the house finished and actually, you know, being ready to move in. And the first one is that all the things you've kept yourself busy with, all the decisions that have to be made about plans and permits and tile choices and paint colours, you know, that can take up a lot of your thinking. And then when all of those decisions are made, then sometimes that's when you then have to do the work of actually processing what's happened. That's right. Yeah, and that is often for a time. That's a time when people actually need to sort of start to work through the enormity and the impact of this experience, because you can carry on sort of in adrenaline and cortisol, and you can be really busy. You can be getting lots of things done, and that's important to your future. And in doing all of that, you actually haven't had the time or the space to actually work through and experience the loss and the grief and all of the things that go along with an event like this. The other thing that can happen is for people who've lost their homes, when they get their new home and they might move into their new home, that is also a time when they really have to perhaps confront for the first time that this has really happened, that their kitchen window doesn't look out on the same view their kitchen window used to look out on, or in fact it might be the first time that they've got all of their possessions, a small collection that they may be, in the one place since the fires, because they've had a box of stuff with their friend and they've had another box of stuff with, you know, their a family member, and then suddenly the new house is rebuilt and all of that stuff comes together in one place, and it's sometimes a very distressingly small amount of stuff that, that they might have. So for a number of reasons, the new house represents change, and change is hard in recovery because we feel like our whole life has been sort of, you know, derailed, and just when we start to get things sort of back on a bit of an even keel, then we have more change, and that is to move from wherever we've been living temporarily into the new house. Now, that's positive in lots of ways, but it's still tough. So I think knowing that recreating and having a place to live and to make a home is an incredibly important milestone in recovery. But it's not a cure-all. It's not going to be the solution to all the challenges. It's one incredibly important milestone, a big step along the way. But again, to be mindful that it'll take time to get used to that new environment, and it'll take time to make it a home, as it took time to make the old house a home. You know, that sort of stuff doesn't happen overnight. So just to be to be mindful that that's going to be take a little bit of adjusting to as well. Yeah.
And I guess given that we're all moving at different speeds and at different stages in this never-ending recovery, perhaps that can be part of the challenge as well, that everyone is in a different place at a different time.
Yeah, I think it's really important to recognise that people will move through recovery at the pace that's right for them, but it won't be the same pace as someone else. Mm-hmm. And even within families, some people will be wanting to get on with the job and other people will needing to take things a bit more slowly. And so we have to really try and support people to make those choices about when they're ready to do things and when it's right to sort of move on to the next stage. We don't all go into the disaster in the same state.
Yes.
You know, we have lots of things in our lives the day before the fire that might have been, you know, positive or might have been struggling with, you know, health issues or all sorts of things that we take into that experience with us. And that means that it's not a level playing field, that people will need to have the space to move through this at the pace and the timing that's right for them. It can be really painful to watch people you love struggling with how to do recovery, how to experience recovery, and similarly, it can feel very, very difficult if you're the one that's needing to take a bit more time, and other people that you love and care about seem to be racing ahead.
Yeah.
So just recognising that this will be a very individualised process, and to be there for each other in whatever way the other person needs is probably the most important thing. It does pass. You know, you do come out of the other side of this, but I think it's sometimes made more difficult if we impose expectations on people about how they should move through and experience this event. If people are worried about family members, I think it's really important to have that conversation and encourage the person that you love and care about to maybe talk about getting some help, because a little bit of help at a certain point might actually avoid needing much more help, you know, further down the track. But that can be very hard, because usually we're talking about people who ordinarily don't need that sort of assistance. They manage life pretty well. Mm-hmm. So it can be hard to know when that becomes important, and for that reason I think it's good to ask for some advice, and then sometimes even just having that conversation is enough to give you some perspective about actually you're probably doing this okay and it's probably working out for you as it should. So Yeah, I think that we need to be kind to each other and really recognise that even though it may feel like it doesn't last forever. Mm-hmm. There will be a point when you have you reach a point in this process where it's not the thing that consumes all of your time and all of your thinking. It can also be really important to remember to take some time away from recovery, from the job of recovery.
Yes.
You know, just lay down the tools for a little while and think about taking some time to do something that you used to enjoy, that mm-hmm. you previously valued about your life before the disaster. And it might be, you know, something that you'd like to do as a recreation activity, fishing, swimming, you know, boating, whatever that might be. It might actually be art or, you know, going to see a movie or you know, reading a book, whatever it is that tops up your tank,
mm-hmm.
Because a lot of what happens in recovery actually drains your tank. So
yeah.
Every now and then you need to put something back in just to give you a little bit of perspective and a little mm-hmm. bit of extra energy to move through and work out what's happening next.
Do you still have bad days, given what you and your community went through? How do you get through those bad days?
I think it's interesting that it's interesting how often we, my family, my community, you know, when you talk to people, you end up talking about the fires. It
yes.
doesn't actually matter what you start talking about. you somehow or other...
Yes.
And I've thought about that a lot, and I think the reason for that is that a disaster like a bushfire touches every aspect of your life. So it doesn't sit in a little compartmentalised part of your mind, you know, oh, that's that experience, that's the disaster. It actually weaves its way through everything, you know. And so every topic has some relevance,
yep.
you know, to this event. And some days the things that we're required to remember or reflect on are really sad, and it's really hard. And you see even some happy things that will be tinged with sadness because of the circumstances and because of the way they connect to what was lost in the disaster. And the thing I think about that is to try and understand that those days will come. Sometimes they'll come out of the blue. Quite often something will trigger an emotion and it will take you by surprise,
mm-hmm.
because you might not necessarily be thinking about the disaster, you might not be thinking about anything particular relating to that, but there'll be something that triggers you in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
All I can say, and it's not very profound, but all I can say about that is go with it. You know, be sad. If you need to be sad about something, be sad, because chances are it's actually very valid.
Yeah.
Is what you're feeling sad about is actually a very sad thing. We're a bit hardwired to put on a happy face and just sort of tough it out. But sometimes I think you just need to be kind to yourself,
mm-hmm.
and understand that that this experience that you've had is a very profound and important experience, and that the grief that people feel is a reflection of the effect of this event on
mm-hmm.
their lives, and sometimes it's okay just to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're feeling like that more than not, then that's probably a different situation. But when those sad memories or feelings pop up, sit with them, experience them, and then let them go and move on. That's the way I try and manage it.
The wisdom of Anne Leadbetter, just solid gold. Anne speaking on the sidelines of the recent Emergency Media and Public Affairs Conference in Sydney. Anne was the recovery coordinator for the Kinglake community following the 2009 Black Saturday bushfires in Victoria. There's so much to digest from all that, perhaps too much to do on your own. With that in mind, the Bushfire Recovery Psychological Support Service is in action, running until March of 2020, providing free face-to-face counselling. Check the show notes for a free counsellor near you. The Chaplaincy Network is also available through the Anglican and Uniting Churches of Tathra and Bega, offering pastoral care to individuals, couples and families, caring for people as they seek to rebuild their lives and homes. There's also a Tuesday support group that meet at Blend in Tathra at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday, led by Sharon Burrup. You'll find contact details in the show notes. The Bega Valley Recovery Support Service from Bega Valley Shire Council, led by Anne, June and Carolyn, is here to help. Anne, June and Carolyn have become such great friends of this community. The service is available Monday to Friday via Unit 6 at Tathra Beach House Apartments. You'll find their email address and phone number in the show notes. And the Red Cross Emergency Service Team is always available to provide psychological first aid. They also carry a stock of printed resources which might be useful reading as you, your family and community continues this journey. Again, you'll find their contact details in the show notes. Next time we talk in Episode 3, a focus on assisting children and young people affected by disaster over the long term. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you found it useful. You've been listening to a special podcast series following the Bega Valley bushfires of 2018, a collaboration between the Australian Red Cross, Southeast New South Wales Primary Health Network and About Regional. My name's Ian Campbell. Take care and we'll talk again soon.